ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। अत्याहार प्रयासश्च प्रजल्प नियमाग्रहः जनसङ्गश्च लोल्यं च षड्भिः भक्त्या विनश्यति। Bhakti is completely destroyed by atyahara, eating too much or collecting too much. Excessive endeavor for mundane things which are very difficult to attain. Mundane talk about subjects that have no relationship with Krishna consciousness. Not following the prescribed rules and regulations, or following them without proper understanding, following them for the sake of following them rather than for understanding the purpose of them. Association with materialistic people and greed. Applied to these projects, excessive eating, well, nice fresh vegetables, milk products, grains will be produced in abundance. And the flavor and freshness is very enticing, and those who live in the fresh air and work hard, they'll also have a good appetite. But still we should remember not to overeat, just take what we require. Also not to collect too much. Simple living, automatically by cutting out from the culture of having electricity, it creates a whole culture around it. Just having electricity means we have so many gadgets we can have and use. Plus, we don't, at least superficially it seems, we don't have to follow the natural cycle of rising with the sun and or rising slightly before sunrise and resting at night. We can go on. And modern life means the city never sleeps. Factories, they run on 24 hours a day, night shifts. So automatically our culture changes by having no electricity, and we fit in with the cycle of time, and we don't accumulate all kinds of things which we don't need. And if we cut out of the money culture also, then again, the money culture in the modern age is the consumer culture, where we're encouraged to buy more and more things that we don't need. Artificial necessities. Srila Prabhupada referred to that as all kinds of things, and all advertisements for all different kinds of things, and technology is always being changed so that people will always want to buy more and more things. Planned obsolescence means you could buy a motor car which would last you your whole life, would run very well, could very easily be built, but they're deliberately built so they start to fall to pieces after a few years, so you have to buy a new one. So we're just living in a culture of institutionalized fraud, and that will affect us. Whereas, and it's a throwaway culture. You buy something and a short time later you throw it away. So much garbage is produced. Of course, things have to be produced in traditional agrarian-based cultures also. Actually, all cultures are agrarian-based, but because you have to eat. But by modern technological advancement, as it's called, or innovations, the number of people engaged directly or even indirectly in producing food in modern life is much lower percentage than previously. So it's more an industrial based. And then in the West we now have, in India it's talking about development, but in the West there's the post-industrial civilization. The countries like America and in Europe, they don't actually produce much. How they're still opulent without producing anything, when they import everything you buy in America, practically every item of clothing, every technical item, even buttons and things. Of course, you don't buy buttons much. When if a button falls off, you buy a new shirt. It's all made in China. China used to be Japan, Korea. So how are they still opulent? It must be by financial manipulation. I can't understand how they're rich otherwise, but it's service-oriented. It means everyone's just doing things for others, and then a lot of the population is unemployed or top-heavy governments which employ a lot of people, and somehow the whole thing runs on. But it has no solid economic basis either in agriculture or industry, and therefore it is doomed, as every civilization is, but some are closer to it than others. Just like we have the saying, on the verge of death, mrityu mukhi. Well, everyone's on the verge of death, but we say that particularly in relationship to people who looks like they're going to pop off very soon. They're old and they don't eat, and they're lying on a bed and their breathing is very poor. Although sometimes you see people go on like that for 10 or 15 years also. So this civilization may drag on. One thing that America still produces lots of is guns, tanks, bombs, and all kinds of other things, which to maintain their economy, they have to keep on using them and producing them, and therefore, quick shift of the camera over to Syria and Iraq. Wars are good for the economy. So, what's that got to do with us? Yeah, we're cutting out of this whole demoniac culture. One small step for man and one great step for mankind. If we just cut out of the consumer culture. And then there's the question of accumulation doesn't arise so much. Of course, accumulation is there in traditional societies also. Gold, things like this. And that's a point of discussion among ourselves, how much we should be interested in that to have a... But at least those who are of Brahminical disposition, they're not interested in accumulation of wealth in terms of really something that doesn't lose its value, like a motor car. If you buy a new motor car, say the price is... How much does a car cost? 3 lakhs, a cheap car? Is it? I don't know. Not the cheapest. 2 minutes after you buy it, if you want to resell it, already the value has gone down. Just for the fact that it's been bought. And after 1 month, the value will be down maybe 30%, like this. So whereas valuable metals and gems, they retain their value, even if the value of paper money, it fluctuates, or virtual money. Nowadays, money is, most of the money is just in some computer, that's all, just imaginary money. But the value of it fluctuates. So, that may be there, but the kshatriyas and vaishyas, they accumulate wealth, but also for the sake of distributing it. They're supposed to give in charity. Especially kshatriyas are supposed to give in charity. They're supposed to accumulate greens for the sake of distributing them in times of necessity. As we see, the government in India does also. They have huge godowns of grains, which they're probably going to need to distribute after all this rain at the time of, supposed to be the time of wheat harvesting. And Vaishyas, they're also supposed to not just hoard money, but give in charity for religious matters. So we see, for instance, the Marwaris are well known as a business community, and in business they can adopt any means to make money, but they give profusely in charity also. So in our communities, when our aim is not to become rich materially. We're not going there for, obviously, it should be fairly obvious, but it's amazing how material conditioning can follow. Even we go to the simple land with the aim of being Krishna conscious, but our materialistic propensities come with us, and we may think, well, I need this, I need that, I need more than those next to me. So this tendency to accumulate more, don't do that. It's a good thing every year at Diwali that's done here in North India, and in South India at the time of Pongal, just to clean the whole house out. And in Tamil Nadu at the time of Pongal. And here at Diwali, you just clean everything out, and you can clean out all the unnecessary things you've accumulated throughout the year. And you can either just leave it out for someone to take if they want it. Just like in Japan, you see people put out in the streets. If you want furniture, clothing, blankets, you can just, people just put it outside. And if no one comes and picks it up, within a week or so, the corporation comes and picks it up. I don't know if they're still doing that because their economy has gone down. They have tiny little houses. And there's this... Previously, they never used furniture. Even now, most of the people sleep on the floor in Japan. But then sometimes they get all these big sofas. I saw in Malaysia also, people, the culture is to sit on the floor, and then somehow they get induced to buy these big sofas, plush sofas. They cover them with cloths and sit on the floor. It's just to show that we have it. So we clear out all the unnecessary things, at least once a year. Better don't accumulate them in the first place. Otherwise, I go in people's homes and open some cupboard and it's full of dozens of toys that the kids maybe played with once, and then they stuff it in the cupboard, and then they completely forget it, and then the next time they go out shopping with their mother, "Ah, I want that toy," and then the mother buys it, and it's in something else to stuff in the cupboard. And it just goes on and on and on. Oh, none of these things are needed. So don't accumulate unnecessary things. And there's this idea that, well, maybe it'll come in useful at some time. And that might come in useful at some point. And you accumulate so many things that might come in useful at some point. That at the time when it does come, that some object that you have could come in useful. You have so many things that you don't even remember it. So... that you've got it. It's under a pile of millions of things which could come in useful at some point in time. So keep things simple. Also in accumulation of land, Srila Prabhupada also says, not to take on more than we can manage or utilize. So that's another consideration. Just take what we can utilize, because it's improper to take land and then not use it, actually. That we were discussing yesterday, that the in Vedic culture, no one actually owns the land, but the king is the custodian of the land, and he'll give it to persons to cultivate, and they have to pay him tax from the produce. They have to give a certain amount of the produce. But if they don't work it, or if they're inexpert in working it, then the king just takes it back and can allot it to someone else. The idea is that we have this land, it should be utilized, so we shouldn't take too much. Of course, in establishing our projects, we may take a little more than we need just in the immediate present, but that's just some practicality, because otherwise the prices tend to gallop up once if we buy a little land only, and we can plan if we have larger plot than we need. Just like we have 32 acres at Nandagram in Gujarat, which we're not utilizing all presently, but within a short time it should be all properly utilized. Something else I thought of, which is going off the theoretical discussion, getting to more practical, is a common thing done when you have a lot of land by rich men as part of their charitable work is to build tanks, water tanks, pukkas, they're called in Bengal, which are very good in many ways, apart from preserving water. If you're a long way from a river, you can use it for bathing. People often use it for drinking water if it's big enough, and then you don't use commercial soap in it. I believe it also helps to keep the water level, the groundwater level up, so it's very good in many ways. It's something you consider if you have 32 acres of land, you could excavate a water tank. So atyahara, prayas, not to undertake very difficult tasks. So the whole idea of the simple living and high thinking is to live simply. That means not to have very, very difficult way of living, very simple way of living. Of course, to establish these projects is a great endeavor. But the reason is that we've gone so far away from natural living that to live simply becomes complicated, just to establish it with all different legal and economic considerations, and that we don't know how to farm and the culture and so many things, and we don't know how to live simply. So it becomes complex to set it all up. But when you settle in, actually life, day-to-day life becomes quite simple, although you're overloaded with having to do so many things. Which in a bigger community, it could be all shared out. And as you're beginning, then you're writing curriculums and so on. But we should always remember, don't bring the city to the country. Don't bring our mentality that we always have to be doing something. And this consciousness that's instilled in us to be a success, you always have to do something and do something new. And just relax. Chant Hare Krishna. The well-known story, there are several versions of it, that in the village a man was sitting under a tree in the shade with his friends, drinking a lassi, and someone came from the city and said, "Why are you all sitting around? You could be working, and you have so much land, you could be producing more and more food." And he said, "Really? Yeah, you see, was on this land, you could plant a mango grove, and then within 20 years, you could have a great business of, you could export the mangoes, you could make mango pulp, and then you'd become a millionaire. You could invest more and get more land, and I can give you a whole scheme. You give me 10% cut, and I'll give you a whole scheme. You can do all that. And yeah, oh yeah, okay, all right. So if I do that, then all right, then that's a lot of endeavor, but I'll become a millionaire. What would be the advantage of that? Well, when you have lots of money, then you can relax and sit with your friends and drink glasses. And I'm already doing that. What do I need to endeavor so much for? This whole idea, yeah. Do more. Don't be... Mode of passion. Relax, relax. Chant Hare Krishna. So Atyahara Prayasascha. Prajalpa. Yeah, we should always remember that we've come to these communities to chant Hare Krishna. So, it might be thought that, well, in the village there's nothing to talk about, there's nothing to gossip about, but there's plenty to gossip about. If you're not gossiping about the latest news and what Narendra Modi is doing, then you'll gossip about the neighbors next door. You see, they don't hang their washing out properly or something. There's always something to gossip about. So that's and it's amazing how even in a small community you can. It's quite possible to engender some nasty politics and completely unnecessary, which has no benefit to anyone, but it's just like if you left Duryodhana with on a desert island with five people, he'd divide them into two camps and make a war. It's just the nature of someone like that. So keep our bad propensities down. Train the mind to be absorbed in Krishna. That's really the point. And niyamagraha that I discussed in our leaders' meeting recently, in the sense of strictness and looseness. This niyamagraha, in the sense of applied to devotional service, applies to one's own personal misapplied fanatical following of rules and regulations or laxity in following them. So in the leaders' meeting I spoke about how a leader can be so strict that that people come to dislike him. Yudhishthira Maharaj in Mahabharata, he states that if the leader is too strict, then the citizens come to hate him. And if he's too loose and doesn't discipline them enough, then they come to disregard him. They don't care for him at all. And then when he does try to give some order, they don't bother because they don't expect to be punished. So some discipline is required. And now, also if no discipline is there, then rogues will have room to work. It's similar to the example given in Shastra that a horse, you have to keep control with the stirrup, keep it tight. But if it's too tight, the horse will rear up in protest and maybe throw you off. And if it's too loose, the horse will wander here and there. So similarly with this, the example is given of sense control. If you too rigidly try to control your senses, then you yourself will have a mental revolt. We see, at least we used to see, devotees, when I joined it was quite common, devotees that would sleep 2 hours only at night and eat just very little food once every day. And then after a few days, trying to forcefully control the senses and cut down on eating and sleeping. And then after a few days of this, you'll find them eating a huge meal and then they go and sleep for 2 days. So, yukta ahara viharasya yukta cheshtasya karmasu yukta swapnava bodhasya yogo bhavati dukaha. Moderation is required. Krishna says one can overcome material misery by the practice of yoga if one does not eat too much or sleep too much or too little. Recreation is also stated. Viharasa yukta, and in one's endeavors also, moderation. Of course, in devotional service, our aim is not moderate, it's moderation, but extremism, full surrender. But in how we live our life in this world, in terms of eating, sleeping, not excessive, not, what's the opposite of excesses? Minimal? Too little. That's a simple word. Two words. Not too much and not too little. So similarly, in communities, rules and regulations are required. But too much discipline should not be required. If people are coming voluntarily to join communities, they know the terms and conditions, and they've come to serve Krishna, then they should automatically cooperate with this. That's hoped for. Not that they feel like they're in a concentration camp and every moment they have to see the rule and this and that. On the other hand, if devotees are allowed to indulge in activities which will lower the morale of the community or the commitment, that has to be dealt with. Just like, for instance, someone may regularly miss Mangalati. This kind of question comes up. They regularly miss Mangalati, but when they're up, they work very hard and they're cooperative and this and that. So how do you deal with such? If they miss Mangalati, then others will also start to think. I had the experience many years ago of telling a brahmachari, come on, you're missing one, you have to get up for Mangalati every morning, and you have to do it. And he said, well, why should I? My guru doesn't go to Mangalati. Why should I go to Mangalati? So he didn't think it was very important, because if it's not required for my guru, why should it be required for me? If someone else can get away with it, why can I not get away with it? So that we have to see. Then we'll have to make some designations. Those who cannot rise early but like to work. There may be others also who like to work but they don't like to chant much. Often those who like to work but they don't like to chant japa, they'll also like kirtan. So then we can have, maybe designate them as shudras or something like this. If they're intellectual types and they don't like to rise early in the morning, that's not a good combination, because then they become ideologues, or those by their intelligence they can give some opinion, then they'll make some philosophy why you shouldn't rise early in the morning. Just like one devotee, another one I got in this case for not rising early. He said, well, Prabhupada's father didn't rise early. Srila Prabhupada, he wrote that my father used to rise a little late. So out of negating all of Prabhupada's instructions to rise early, plus Prabhupada's personal example, he found one example and took that. Okay, that's the standard. So it's a cheating mentality. Nishid acha kutinati. jibe hingshan, lab puja pratishta jata upashakagon. These are the prominent ways in which our bhaktilata is spoiled, the weeds that grow up. Nishedacha, forbidden behavior. Kutinati, which means kutniti or kapti, cheating, deceitfulness. Jibe hingshan, hingsa. Apart from hingsa being direct violence, it's also a state of mind, is it not? Consciousness of being dvesh buddhi, asad bhavana, having bad feelings towards other, irsha, they're all similar words. So that mentality of wanting to harm others, and then the desire for gain, respect. I often used to think puja and pratishta, they're very similar, because puja means to be worshipped, or literally means to be respected, and pratishta means to be honored, so they're very similar. But pratishta can also mean position, so we can take it like that also, to be established in a position, so to get yourself well established. So simple living and high thinking. Sharalata, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, simplicity, or in Hindi, Saralata, Bengali, Sharalata, is the first qualification of a Vaishnava. Means non-duplicitousness. So it's not just simple living in the sense of living on the land, but our mentality also should become non-crooked. And actually, living a simple life should help in that way. That's why we often hear that city people, they look down on farmers. Oh, they're just stupid farmers. Stupid means they're not what's called street wise. They know how to live in the city and not be cheated by others. And city people, just in central London, I used to live there for some time and distribute Prabhupada's books, and you'd see all kinds of people out there, and they can see very simple people, tourists come from other countries, they're expert at cheating them, because they're so trusting. You live in a village and you're very trusting of others. They come to a city and people, just like, for instance, there's a on Carnaby Street, a fashionable street in London, there are all these photographers who would catch people and say, "Here, take your photo." And then so they'd get a whole group of people from Greenland or wherever they are and take a photo with the street sign, Carnaby Street, it's a famous street. Take a photo, take their name and address, take £10 from them and say, "Okay, I'll send the photo to you by post." There was no film in the camera. In those days, cameras required film. So it was just £10 every 5 minutes for them. Great business. The police never bothered to stop them. They must have paid off the police. I guess maybe they weren't doing anything illegal. I don't know. But so in one sense, people are simple, but this sharpness of being a city slicker, it has its usage for preaching in this world, just like Srila Prabhupada when he was like, "How could you come to New York?" "I'm a Calcutta boy." He grew up, he described as a child, he would grow up going out early in the morning, he'd see the prostitutes coming home from the work, and there were riots, Hindu-Muslim riots going on in the area which he lived in, and so he would... He was doing business, so he knew all these things, which is very useful for if you're going to establish an international movement. And Srila Prabhupada also knew how to deal with Mr. Nair, who was trying to cheat him, but he couldn't cheat Prabhupada. So it's useful for establishing an international movement, but they're not qualities which generally we want to inculcate in human beings. So generally, it should be that raised in an atmosphere of love and trust, and in which love for Krishna can grow very naturally, not doubting. Once you start doubting, then you can doubt everything, and there's no end to it. So we can place our faith in Krishna. So Prajalpa Niyamagraha, keeping a balance, but rules should be known, but best that we're not in rule consciousness, but rather that everyone follows just automatically. Well, there may be so many examples that so many things. The children, they stand when the teacher comes in the room. So it's not that it's a rule, and if you don't do it, you'll be forced to go up and down 200 times, sit-ups. But just, they do it. Just, they don't think twice. It's just part of their life. So, Niyamagraha, Janasangha, that means associating with mundane people. And of course, that's one major reason to go to the farm project, to get away from that association which degrades our consciousness. This point is so important that it's mentioned both in the prescriptions and the proscriptions. The prescriptions is that which should be done, vidhi. There we have sangha tyaga. And in the proscriptions, that which should not be done, nishedha. So it's mentioned. So any rule, any rule can be turned around the other way. And just like smartavya satatang Vishnu, vismartavya na jatu chit. It means the same thing, but it's just stated from the other angle to emphasize it. One should always think of Vishnu and never forget him. So we could also include in that we want to distance ourselves even from those devotees who are very discouraging. All right, you don't like it. All right, yeah. We don't want to associate with those devotees. We'll associate with those devotees who are appreciative and encouraging, and those who are very negative. No, you can't do it. We tried it. We failed. So we better not to associate with them. And lolium, greed. So that second definition of atyahara comes with that, and that also greed to be recognized, greed is an intent, we say kam, krodha, lobha, this lobha or intense desire is an intensification of karma. Karma is usually manifest as a particular kamana for some particular object, but greed is a sense of just wanting to accumulate everything for one's own enjoyment, a sustained intense state of karma, material desire. So there's not much scope for that in the farm community. So we should be saved from that. And greed to have many things, generous attitude. The inculcation of dharma, sadharan dharma. Sadharan dharma means the rules and regulations of the different varnas and ashrams. plus rules for every varna and ashram that everyone should follow, like rising early. That's for every varna and every ashram. So, one major facet of dharma, of observing dharma, is to inculcate selflessness, the sense of being not so much I, me, and mine, aham mama, but is my duty to, as my dharma, to serve others. So the brahmana, he's in the topmost position in society, but he's to serve others. We have Devarshi, Bhutapta, Nunang, Pitrinam, so we serve the rishis, or we pay the debt to the rishis from whom we have received knowledge by giving it to others. The forefathers, we repay them by giving birth to others. So the whole sense that our life is fully, we're indebted, we have to serve, and we serve Nrinam also, all of human society. And that, of course, one who is fully surrendered to Mukunda has no more indebted, but then by his service to Mukunda, then he feels an attitude of complete service to Mukunda, which spreads to others also. It's not that, okay, now I'm serving Mukunda, so forget all the devas, rishis, bhutas, and everyone else, but rather one's his service attitude to them increases, because he thinks, I have to, what I've received, Krishna conscious, I have to share that with others. So this consciousness of dharma is completely intertwined with varnashram society. It's not just a matter of dividing people into different varnas and ashrams. There's a whole mentality which goes with it. And for Vaishnavas, that becomes a channel towards the real dharma, beyond sadharan dharma or worldly dharma. But still, generally one will follow the practices of worldly dharma, unless and until one comes to the platform of a Paramahamsa. And a sannyasi also, to some extent, is exempt from the general rules. Still he has to follow sannyas dharma. And even a Paramahamsa, we see like Gaurkishor Das Babaji, Vangshi Das Babaji Maharaj, they didn't follow hardly any rules of anything, but they were very cautious in the matter of associating with women. So for them there was no question of fall down, but they were very cautious, nevertheless very cautious in this regard, at least to set an example for others. So it seems like a very difficult proposition to establish these communities. Just like Arjuna said to Krishna, it seems very difficult to control the mind. Krishna answered to this proposal of Arjuna's, Asangshayang Mahabaho Mano Dur Nigraham Chalam Abhyasena Takauntaya Vairagyena Chagrihyate. Krishna said, yes, it's very difficult to control the mind, I agree. But it is possible by practice and by a spirit of vairagya, of non-attachment. So it may be very difficult to establish these communities, but by sticking to it and being detached, don't get disappointed if things don't go right very well in the beginning. And detached means we're going to have a spirit of vairagya to go there at all. We may say, well, we'll get more people to go if we have all facilities and this and that, but then what's the point of making a new town in the country? It's a completely different approach to life. Just like we hear scientists talking about they're on such and such a planet, we sent our space rover and we have ascertained that there is no life on that planet as we know it. So what we are doing, we're setting up a kind of life which is completely different from life as people on this planet know it. We're becoming aliens. We have a completely different... How can you live like that? How can you live without television and sports and newspapers and schools which teach you how to get a degree? And how can you live like that without all these... So it's something completely different. But so it'll require a sense of detachment from this world, which is anyway, to be detached from this world or to desire to be detached from this world is the beginning of intelligence anyway, because attachment to this world causes us to remain within it. And to remain within it means to go on suffering birth after birth. So detachment and practice, and actually, as you have all experienced, those of you who are doing it, it doesn't take much practice to get used to it. Just like in Salem, I insisted that when you move to the new land, no electricity, and everyone was against it, so I'm told. They didn't tell me directly, except Gokulchandra agreed to do it because I told him to do it. And then so everyone was grumbling, rah, 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 rah. And then, but after 3-4 days, everyone was used to it, and now they don't want to go back to having electricity, because it's very nice, and it's very, very suitable for spiritual advancement. So, and then, let's see, not much time. Anukul yasya sankalpa pratikul yasya varjanam rakshishatiti vishvaso guptritvevaranang tata atmanikshipa karpanye sharavidha sharanagati. So we're going to these communities to fully give ourselves to Krishna, or at least get on the path of doing so. That's the whole idea. And completely depend on Krishna. That we're depending on Krishna's mercy directly. So that's one of the... Krishna will protect us. Krishna will maintain us. This is our rakshishatiti vishvaso guptritvevara. And the whole way of life is anukul, is the sankalpa, the determination to do that which is favorable for Krishna's service. And reject that commercial, consumer, money-oriented, full of lust, greed, anger, envy, pride, and illusion, society of the demons which we're raised in, that whole society is pratikul. It's all, by its very nature, it's not how it works against being Krishna conscious. It is possible to be Krishna conscious within it, to some extent, but within it, as I've said many times, you have to live among non-devotees and associate with them, and you have to give your mind, your heart, your work, your energy to some boss who squeezes every last drop of blood out of you and gives you the minimum amount of money he can get away with for doing so. So even to live in this society, so give it up, go out of it, and come to make a situation that is favorable for Krishna consciousness. So that's the whole point. We always have to remember, our aim and object is not ecological living that's a favorable side product, and which materialistic people may think, who are into all this ecology thing, I think, very good, it's all ecological. But our ecologicalism, if there is such a word, is not our aim and object. Our aim and object is to live in a society in which we can live with devotees. Tandera charana shavi bhakta shane bash. to live with devotees in an atmosphere that is conducive for Krishna consciousness, and give up everything that is non-conducive to that, with full faith that Krishna is protecting us, Krishna will maintain us, and it makes a very favorable situation in which we can fully give ourselves to Krishna. Atmanikshepa means to give ourselves to Krishna, which we can't do if we're working among people who want us to give ourselves to them and not to Krishna. And karpanya, dainya, variously translated, humility, we can say. So that comes naturally for one who depends on the land, the cows, and Krishna, because we know, generally we'll find almost universally that farmers all over the world believe in God or some gods or some supernatural power, because they can see it all around them. And then they know that this miracle which they act catalytically within, of placing seeds in the ground and then some crops grow, and the whole complex interaction of life forms, how different plants and animals and birds and the air and the seasons and the weather, they all interact to produce food. It's simply amazing. You see a cow give birth to a calf, and there's something more than some combination of chemicals going on there. So they can practically experience that we are subordinate to higher powers than ourselves. And we're not talking about governmental powers, but supernatural powers. So that automatically brings a sense of humility. Even seeing the stars at night, which you don't see in the cities, that's very good for inculcating a sense of one's own insignificance. And it's not only a sense of insignificance, because we are insignificant. But in city life, you don't see the stars at night. Maybe a few, but you might see, despite the neon light, but you can... But there's the idea that I can control by manipulating these machines. I press a button and then this happens. Drive a car, especially on an open freeway, drive a car very fast. Someone cuts in front of you, pop the horn. The whole way of life gives this sense of that you can become a controller artificially. So these farm communities help to foster that. Fostering it helps to foster sattva gun, which is the best platform to aspire for Krishna consciousness from. It's not in and of itself perfection. It's also one of the modes that bind us in this material world. Tribhir gunamaya bhavaya ebi sarvam idam jagat mohitam nabijanati mamebhya paramabhyayam. So it's also one of the modes that bind us in this world, but it's getting closer to the real thing. It fosters many of the qualities that devotees have by being devotional. There's detachment from the world, Sukhe dukhe same kritva. Of course, that was said to Arjuna when he should fight, but fighting means rajagun, but on the background of a sattvic detachment. It's quite amazing how anyone could do that. Tatamana pamonayo ho, who can? Someone who's in the mode of goodness, they're neither desirous of being praised, nor are they disturbed when they're insulted. Someone in the mode of ignorance also, because they're just so dull in their consciousness. It doesn't mean, anyway, no one praises them. And if anyone insults them, then they don't care because they're just so dull. But, the sattvic atmosphere, which should automatically, it doesn't automatically come from living in the country, just like there are many people from cities who have their country home, and they go in the country and they're completely in the mode of passion, and driving up to Badrinath, there's someone driving along with their Bollywood music blasting out of their car, and then they stop, there's some little, the road's a little wide, they stop, get out, get their gen set going and have a TV going as they're making a picnic, blasting the whole valley with the sounds, and it just, they even if they come to the Himalayas, the Deva Bhumi, but they bring the land of rishis, but they bring their lower consciousness with them. So we should adjust. Come to sattva-gun. Sattva-gun doesn't mean total withdrawal, but action in that consciousness of detachment. But of course, devotees, they're dependent on Krishna, so they come to a higher platform than sattva-gun, but their mode of life and their general attitude is in consonance with sattva-gun. Same thing, don't bring the city to the country, don't bring the city atmosphere to the country. Okay, Hare Krishna. Any question about this?
Prabhupada, there is one thing seen that devotees, when they come to these communities, they fear committing offenses, because when they come and live together, they feel that because of
Because of living with devotees, we fear committing offenses to them. That's like the Mayavadi solution. That, well, we don't want to make any, we don't want to have anything, we don't have anything to do with anyone, and then there won't be any interaction, and the kisi se kuch lena dena, it's nahi. There won't be any interaction, and there won't be any offenses, there won't be any attachment. So yes, if we live with each other, there'll be some give and take and some misunderstandings and this and that. And then we have to come to the higher platform. If you think, well, let me live in the city and then I'll only offend the non-devotees. It doesn't matter because everyone's offending everyone else all the time anyway. So, but that's a silly idea, that I won't come to the farm. I won't live with devotees so that I don't offend them. So many times devotees ask me, how can we get free from offenses, and the answer is just don't make it. Don't make offenses. If you're thinking, how can I get free from offenses, then you're already thinking, I'm going to make offenses, then how will I get free from the results? Just don't be in the consciousness of making offenses. Some give and take, misunderstandings will always be there, but this whole, it's another of the strange things which has ended our movement, this over preoccupation with don't make offenses, and all the time, no, don't make offenses, don't make offenses, don't make offenses. Just don't do it, that's all. It's just like you don't go around telling people all the time, don't pee in your pants. Just don't do it, that's all. And it's unnatural, unnecessary, and of no value to anyone, so just don't do it, that's all. And in the course of human interaction, there will be some misunderstandings. Due to our previous conditioning, we may sometimes say things or do things that we shouldn't do, but if we're actually devotees and we're actually coming together to serve Krishna, then you can, it doesn't matter if there's some misunderstanding. And you just, okay, so manchakalpa through is finished, and just go on. And don't get too much on this mental platform. Oh, I'm making offense. We should be careful not to make offenses, but actually if we're living like devotees, then we shouldn't be like Kamsa, whose whole mentality is to offend Vaishnavas. If we're actually living as Vaishnavas, then naturally we'll appreciate other Vaishnavas, and we won't want to exploit anyone, what to speak of Vaishnavas, or misbehave with them. If we have some, if by nature we have a somewhat rough character or whatever, then that can be improved, and others will have to tolerate for some time if they see the person's trying to improve himself. So just don't get too mental about all these things. There will be some. Definitely there'll be some misunderstandings, this and that, this and... But just don't get too... so mental all about it. Yeah, you had some question. What was that?
What is the Shastric basis of this statement, simple living and high thinking?
What is the Shastric basis of the statement, simple living and high thinking? The Shastric basis is, I believe, the poet Kalpa, who Srila Prabhupada quoted. It's not really Shastra. But that can be deduced from Bhagavad Gita in relation to the modern complex society. Kamasya nendriya priti yava jivasya. What's the next? Yavad labho jiveta yavata jigya jiveta tatva jigyasa. What is it? Narto yascheha karma bihi. That's a good one. Vairagya vidyana jabhakti yogam. Yeah. I better say that again. What's that? Kamasya nendriya priti labho jiveta yavata jiveta tatva jigyasa narto yascheha karma bihi. I just said it again for my own benefit because it's one of the verses which I thought I learned but I always struggle with. So, life's desires should not be aimed at gratifying the senses. Srila Prabhupada words this. One should desire to self-preservation, or healthy body, for the sake of cultivating self-realization. This should be the goal of all works. So there you go. That's applicable to simple living and high thinking, isn't it? So, what are you going to do? You're going to write another letter to Narendra Modi, telling him what he should do? Told me yesterday you wrote a letter to Narendra Modi. Probably got sent to the rubbish pile with another 2,000 letters daily. Like, that word should be used about 99% less than it's commonly used at the present. Everyone says like. Completely meaninglessly.
You said in your lecture, we have
a... like. I didn't say like. Either I said it or I didn't say it. What did I say?
Without electricity, farm communities, without modern amenities.
Yeah. Modern amenities. That's another misleading term. The modern gadgets which bind us up in the slave life of the corporate world, we think we've got a great advantage getting all these things. Yeah?
Question is that we can't use to the minimum requirement these modern amenities and commodities, so that to the extent to which they are favorable
We can use them in the communities to the extent that they're favorable. Well, if you use them, then you have to have electricity, you have to pay the bill, you have to work more than required to pay the bill, you want more and more of them, you'll never satisfied with what you have to get the latest one. If it's good to have an iPhone, then it's good to have the latest one, and it goes on and on and on. So, minimize. That's the idea. Keep it simple. Bare necessities. Srila Prabhupada often uses that term, right? Bare necessities. In the second canto, he speaks about that. One should be satisfied with the bare necessities. One of the verses, translation, Also, Shukadev says what? Chirani King Patina. Then we can find some old clothes worn or thrown on the street. Of course, he himself didn't even do that. He went completely naked. In this area, actually, I'm down by more like close to there, Kurukshetra, Shuktal, Kuru Jangala. He was wandering around there. Then what is that? The caves of the mountains provide shelter, and the trees provide food. The rivers, if they're not polluted, provide water. And then kasmad bhajanti kavi. Yeah, you don't need a pillow. You can use your arm. So kasmad bhajanti kavayo dhanadur madandhan. Why should an intelligent or learned person flatter people who are durma? They're blind and proud of wealth. Why? To get all these things, we flatter, or to get all these things that we think we need, we have to flatter, or we have to subordinate ourselves to these rascals who are simply interested in accumulating more and more wealth. Cut out from that. The one great thing that we get is the independence from all, and also independence from the desires that they create in our minds for all these things. Automatically, this material desire which binds us in this material world, automatically the fever of material desire goes down when we stop cultivating it. As long as we're in the consumer consciousness, we need this gadget, we need something else, we need a new car, this, that. We're just completely caught up in a cycle of never-ending desires. But then if you go to the community where only the basic necessities are there, there's nothing to desire, and we come there with a specific aim of cutting out, and it happens, we just cut out from all those desires. Very advantageous for spiritual life. Traditionally, people would do that. They'd leave home at the age of 50. Panchas ordvang vanang rajit. At the age of 50 or above, one should go to the forest to cut out from the materialistic society. The materialist society is so materialistic today. So, grihasthas can do that also. They can cut out from the grossly, insanely materialistic society and come to the replica of Krishna's society without artificial necessities. Hare Krishna. Shall we reconvene a little early today, 10:15? Is that enough time for everyone to go take prasadam, do whatever you're doing, come back again? Is that all right? All right, Hare Krishna.